Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support. And now it's time to relax with our coffee break.
I'd like to introduce a very talented musician now, Steve Wickett. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you, Jo?
I'm fine, thank you. We'll start off with going right back to when you were little. And did you always have a love of music, Steve?
The first time that I was aware that music mattered was I would have been about four, and I was at a party, and Roy Orbison was playing on a record, and I just was drawn to this music, and I just said to one of my aunts, "Excuse me, who's playing?" Because I'm very polite. "Excuse me, who's playing, you know, on the record?" Well, this aunt, knowing that I was only four, just went, "Oh, it's Jim Reeves." And I'm there as a four-year-old going, "I must remember that name, Jim Reeves, Jim Reeves." So I asked for Jim Reeves for Christmas, and then was very, very disappointed when I was hearing Bongo Bongo and Not Running Scared and Cry and Pretty Woman. But it was that moment was when I realised that I actually knew whether someone could or couldn't sing. And my brother actually recalls me couldn't bear the Beatles because they used to sing out of tune. And I used to be saying to my brother all the time, "I don't understand why my dad likes this band," not realising they were the biggest band in the world. And it took a little while for me to get used to their voices. For as talented as they are as writers, they certainly wasn't singers as far as my ears was concerned back then. But Roy Orbison was, you see. And so that was it. And then I got a little keyboard, a little tiny one, when I was about 11. And that was, you know, the idea I could make that sound like things I'd heard on the television. And it sort of went from there then. And there was not amazing talent there. I'm going to say this right now. It wasn't anything about, like, you interviewed Andre, and Andre has an amazing talent, and he can sit there and magic just comes out of his fingers. Now, when I play, I learn everything note by note. So I actually literally learn a bit like how a sequence of patterns would go. I can't just sit there and magic comes out the fingers. So we're different types of musicians, but the love and the passion for the music is exactly the same. It's just the way that the brain and the body approaches the instrument is totally different. And so I work really, really hard. I'm not saying that other people don't, but I work really, really hard to sound okay. And some people sit there and within a few moments, they've got magic happening. But I think you appreciate it more if you have to work harder. Think you do appreciate it more.
Yeah, because some people just pick up an instrument, it's like, you know, it just comes out, and like you say,
it's incredible to watch. And I'm never envious of it. I actually get like a charge, like an electrical charge from it. So the guys in the band that I'm working with at the moment, they can just sit there and one of them will name a song, and the next minute the one knows that they're going to do the second harmony, the third harmony, and I'm there, and I am their audience, and this is in sound check, and I don't join in because it's not something I can do. I mean, if they said next week we're going to sing and they give me a week, yeah, I can come back and I will be part of that. But I watch people when they've got that kind of talent, and like it's like an electrical charge hearing that kind of talent.
So did you have music lessons as a child? When you got that keyboard, did you have keyboard lessons or are you self-taught?
Yeah, I had private lessons and lessons at school. I needed both.
So, you're very honest.
So I had private lessons, and because I can learn music very well, although I can't just do this where people can just play things off the top of their head, teach me something. And it's like once it goes into that stone, it's etched into the stone and it stays there. And so when it came down to teaching me classical music, because I was being taught by good teachers, I then could like parrot fashion exactly what they wanted me to do. And at the age of 14, I got the highest grade 5 in the UK. So, like, I was seen on paper to be a phenomenal musician. But the reality was that I, you know, where some people might spend an hour at night to practicing their scales, I would spend 3 hours practicing my scales. And that applies even now. I mean, I will run up and down my scales, even if I've got the piano quietly, whilst I'm talking to people on the phone. I'm not doing it right now. You have my full attention.
So what age were you when you first started performing?
15. I used to do 2 shows a week. I mean, I know it's illegal, but no one was taking the money off me. It was my money. And I used to get paid £35 a show. And that was in 1983. So I'd have £70 a week. And so, like, I felt like I was a little millionaire. So you can imagine I'd go to the tuck shop at school at 15 and buy it because I could. And so I was the ultimate show off. But 15 was when I first started doing shows. And so that was 30 years ago. That's what's scary.
Ouch.
Yeah, it is scary.
So have you been performing ever since?
Yeah, I went to college for 3 months because everyone was saying you should get a serious career behind you. And because I wasn't academic, and this is not putting people down at piano tune, but because I wasn't academic, they actually decided I could do piano tuning. And hearing all these pianos all out of tune as I walked down the corridor sounded like some kind of nightmare film. And I never liked horror films. And so I left. And I decided that I would become a full-time musician. And then I wasn't really good enough, to be fair. So in the beginning, there was a lot of nice audiences. And there wasn't so much the X factor, more the R factor to start with, because obviously they knew I was partially sighted. And so it's like, oh, well, he's trying. Clap him anyway. And then I'd get to the end of a gig, and I think the claps were relief. Just had to go, no more, no more, no more. No, so it was, yeah. But then we got to a stage where I thought, I've got to get myself where I am, at least credible. So that took a lot, serious amounts of hard work. And that then took me up to when I started doing shows with other performers. And that's the best that you can have, because you are learning from the best then. And I'm still, even though I'm 45 now, still learning from the best. And there's the guys in my band or in the show that we're in at the moment, I am the weakest link, but I'm a strong enough link to be within the show. And the show is going absolutely phenomenal. And as I said the other day on Audioboo, Shaking Stevens was in the crowd on Saturday night watching the show, which was absolutely, it was spooky to actually know that someone who I actually thought was, you know, an amazing rock and roller, and I adored him as a teenager, is now in a show and I'm on the stage. It was a bit, I can't really explain it. There's no words to explain the feeling, but I was shaking from head to toe. I was shaking Stephen.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine, because he was one of my favourite when I were younger. You know, I was at a similar era to yourself, and having one of your idols watching you must be exciting but scary as well.
Well, we didn't. Luckily, the promoters knew that I would actually fall apart, so they never told me until I come off. But I knew there was something going on, and the weird thing was the venue we were playing is supposed to have a ghost called Mary Blandy, and she killed her father, this woman did. And then the play about the woman was played in that theatre, and apparently whilst it was going on in that theatre, because they hung this lady, this Mary Blandy, and this Mary Blandy, apparently mirrors were falling off walls, cups were rising, there were people hearing doors slam, the lights were going on and off all the time whilst they were showing this play. So he was all backstage talking about this ghost. And I wasn't aware that some of the over sort of dramatic people backstage. I was thinking it was all about these ghosts. I wasn't aware it was about Shaking Stevens. I was thinking, oh my God, I'm in a band where they're all absolutely, you know, they're nervous wrecks. They think the ghost is going to come on stage tonight. But it was actually really that the fact that they knew that Shaking Stevens was in and I was sort of being kept in the dark about it.
So we know evidently that Shaking Stevens was one of your idols, but who else was?
Yeah, I sort of Shaking Stevens, and then because it was diverse sort of styles, I used to love Prince because Prince didn't stick to the rules. Like most artists, they're in a genre, so you have a blues artist or a rock and roll artist or a balladeer or something like that. And to have someone like Prince who didn't fit any of the, didn't tick any of the boxes, I loved that about Prince. I don't know whether I'd ever want to meet the guy, but I, as a musician, I just think that he's the one that I just, every time I heard something about, you know, When Doves Cry come out, I'd never heard anything like that, Little Red Corvette. And then he could write beautiful songs like The Most Beautiful Girl in the World. And it's just an incredible talent. Now, Elton's a very talented guy, but Elton John, his music sounds very similar. So you instantly know an Elton John song before you've heard it, if you know what I mean. You can hear an Elton John song for the first time and you think, yeah, that's Elton. You don't always think that about Prince. And so like that kind of writing and that kind of genius going on there. So Prince was, someone I was really, really into.
And you, we haven't mentioned this yet, but you don't actually play as yourself, do you? Well, of course it's you, but you are a tribute artist, aren't you?
Yeah, well, that's another situation where I got a friend of mine was sort of tongue-in-cheek, but a little bit serious. So to the one day I was playing at the piano and this Jerry Lee Lewis song came on the radio and he said, you'll never be able to play like that. And that was it. That was like a red rag to a bull. So actually have someone say you'll never be able to play like that. So I learned a few Jerry Lee Lewis songs to prove a point. And by chance, I was showing someone at a show, one of the Jerry Lee Lewis songs, when this agent guy came over and he said, if you get yourself an hour spot, I can, you know, get you some gigs. And I said, no, I'm not interested in doing an hour spot. And then when he told me how much money I could earn, because as a tribute artist, you earn about four times the amount you will as yourself. And so like you sort of scraping by in sort of quite rough venues sometimes. I mean, I played the one venue and I thought, oh, that's nice. There's a little fan on stage because I could feel this like cool breeze every so often just by the sides of my cheeks. And I thought, lovely cool breeze. And then I realised afterwards it was kids throwing things at me to see if I would duck.
Oh, no.
And so beer mats and whatever they could get hold of was shooting past me, luckily not hitting me, but I was feeling the breeze of all these objects. So they were the sort of venues I was playing, earning hardly anything. And suddenly, if I did a tribute, I'm in theatres and the money goes like, you know, to a point where you know that you can afford your mortgage. And so the tribute thing then, I always admired Jerry Lee Lewis's music. I'm nothing like the guy. I mean, I don't take heroin. I have never married my cousin and all the kind of things that Jerry Lee Lewis has done. And I certainly couldn't drink a pub dry. I don't drink. I mean, I'd get drunk on a wine gum. So like I've got no chance. So to actually have it where you've got someone like Jerry Lee, it's quite laughable that I should be paying tribute to him. But I really do. I enjoy doing the gigs.
So you're actually on tour at the moment, aren't you?
Yeah, I should have really got myself at this point a date sheet. I'm all over the country. And what I'll do and what I do is I put up every week where I'm going to be that weekend on Twitter. So, for instance, this weekend I was in Henley on Thames. And then the next day I was in Paignton in Devon. And so we really do. That was a 6-hour drive between them two venues because of the traffic and everything else. So we thought it was going to be 4 hours, but it was 6 hours. And it really was a case of leaving the one venue, getting to the hotel, getting up, on the road for 20 past 10, arriving at the venue for 5 o'clock, taking out all the equipment, and there is seriously a ton of equipment. I mean, people sometimes say that and they don't mean it, but with all the gear that we use, the speakers stand 7 feet high. We have lighting rigs and gantries and everything else that need to all be set up and placed on stage, and the grand piano. And so all this had to go in from 5 o'clock till 6:20. Then we sound checked till 7, and then the venue was full at 7:30 and the show started. And then as soon as it finishes at 11:30, we've got to take all the stuff down. And some of the guys, so they're leaving this venue now at 1 o'clock in the morning. Some of the guys travelled 4 hours back home after that gig. I couldn't have done it. I went straight to a hotel. Because I'm a bit like, Madonna in that kind of situation. Give me a hotel. But some of them actually travel back, because what they do is they save money by not paying for the hotels then. So it's almost like they're awake for 24 hours. I couldn't do it.
Wow. So I'm guessing, well, I know that one of the questions that most people would probably ask you if they were here now would be that, what is it like performing as a totally blind person?
It's a strange one, because I have to learn. The hardest part is learning the stage, because obviously I'm not a tribute to a blind person. I'm not Ray Charles or Stevie Wonder. I don't rock enough for them. And I have to learn the stage, and it's like a mobility lesson. So once we've done the sound check, I'm off, I'm on, I'm off, I'm on, because I have to sort of strut onto that stage like I mean business. And it's no point me all cocky, you know, with my strut across the stage and I walk past my piano or walk off the edge of the stage. And I nearly did it one night. I actually forgot which venue I was at, and I said, I don't need to learn this stage, I know it. But I'd got the name wrong, and so rather than I went to walk proudly onto this stage, and luckily an arm grabbed me as I was about to sort of do a stage jump. So that's the worst part. Once I'm sat at the piano, Jerry Lee Lewis had a particular way of sitting at the piano, and he doesn't sit straight on the way a normal piano player would sit. You actually sit with one leg over the side of your piano stool, which is then so your knee is facing the audience, and then your other knee is almost under the piano, so you're almost doing like a sitting down type of split type thing. And then the microphone is not by the piano. The microphone is at the end of the stool where your knee is facing. And so it's the most unusual way to sort of sit and play. And that's once you've got that sort of pose, and then you know it, you know, I remember watching him when I could see how he moves. So I sort of got all the moves to how he moves. But I am not quite as flexible as he is, because the one problem you've got when you can't see the keys anymore is I can't dance around my piano, because I'd end up sounding like Les Dawson hitting all the wrong keys. So I have to have locators so I know exactly where I am at any one moment. And I tend to use my left knee. My left knee faces middle C, and it's quite a pointy knee, so I'm good. I'm good to go.
So do you, as well as performing as Jerry Lee Lewis, do you still perform as yourself as well?
Yeah, what tends to happen is, especially with this show now, is because I start the show with sort of 3 or 4 songs as Jerry Lee, I will move away from him just slightly, which is bending the rules a little bit, but I've never had a complaint so far. And then I will bring in, you know, other things that I like, and bring in other parts to my voice so people can hear that the voice is actually a lot stronger than just the Jerry Lee Lewis sound, because he's got a very unusual voice, Jerry Lee Lewis. And so it allows me to sort of show the audience that there is more depth to the vocal. And I will bring in medleys of other artists depending on, I mean, I tend to sort of judge an audience after they've come into the room, to I sort of have a fair idea of what's going to work. So I will then, you know, I pick and choose as I'm on stage, and I'm touching wood, because up till now I've not had any complaint. And you would think the Jerry Lee Lewis fans would be coming up sort of saying, you didn't do a whole night of Jerry Lee, but they don't. They just enjoy the night. And I think if you're a performer and you enjoy what you're doing and you're not just in it for the money, I think the audiences get that, and they're with you, you know, all the way. So, like, I'm very, very fortunate.
How can people find out more about you and maybe get hold of any music and that sort of thing?
I'm having a brand new website built as we speak. I have a website at the moment and it will be this address. We just haven't moved it across yet. So you simply go to jerryleelewis.co.uk. And it's that simple.
It's not bad getting that domain then, is it really?
It's not, no. Is it really? No. No,
I tried to get tescos.com, but they got there first.
So you said that you advertise that you're on Twitter each week. You put where you're going to be performing as well. So can people follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, and that's JLL. That's Jerry Lee Lewis, obviously. JLL underscore tribute. So JLL underscore underline, whichever you want to call it, tribute.
Brilliant. And people are going to hear one of your songs. Is it a cover that you're doing for
Yeah,
us?
Because I went to see Shakin' Stevens, I thought I've got to do Green Door. So
fantastic. Oh, thanks very much, Steve. It's been brilliant talking to you.
I'll let you introduce your track then.
Okay, so this is just recorded just a couple of days ago because I've seen the Shakin' Stevens, you know, the fact that he was at my show, and I thought to pay tribute back to him, this is Shakin' Stevens and Green Door.
Midnight, one more night with my sleeping, watching till that morning comes creeping. I said, Green Door, what's that secret you're keeping? There's no piano I'm a player behind the Green Door. Don't know what they're doing, but the life
contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.